Hello and welcome to Animal Voices here on CIUT 89.5 FM. On today's show, we'll be speaking with Anita Kreintz of the Toronto Pig Save and Patty Blursch of the newly created Burlington Pig Save. The Toronto Pig Save is a collective of artists, activists, and writers based right here in Toronto. The group's almost weekly protests bear witness to the suffering of pigs en route to Toronto's biggest slaughterhouse, Quality Meatpackers. The protests have become something of a hub for our Southern Ontario animal activists, drawing in many important figures from various other Toronto-based groups, including ARC2, the University of Toronto Animal Rights Group, the Love and Rage Liberation Collective, and the newly created Stop York Animal Testing. I sat down with Anita and Patty on Saturday. Thank you both for joining me today after a long day of protesting and yoga, and on such short notice, no less.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So I think the best place to start probably is to talk about how your respective campaigns came about. Why did this issue of pig slaughter strike you both as a key site for organizing? And how long have you guys been involved in activism before this?
Okay, I guess I'll start with it. Question. I've lived around Bathurst and Queens Quay for about 4 years. And I knew that there was a pig slaughterhouse near where I lived. And I felt a lot of anxiety, and I've asked a lot of other activists, oh, can you do an outdoor education video display, or can you do something? And nothing really got off the ground. And then I adopted this wonderful dog from Project Jesse, Mr. Bean, last year around November. And when I adopted him, I started walking on Lakeshore with him every day on a long walk, say half hour, 1 hour walk in the morning. And I would see these transport trucks with pigs every day. So it was really in my face. And at that time, I was also reading a biography on Gandhi, Tolstoy, Ramakrishna, and Vivekananda, all by Romaine Rowland, who was a vegetarian and a Nobel laureate.
I told you, she reads every book there is.
And what sort of struck me in all these biographies was that these great men took action whenever there was something wrong in their local community. So even Tolstoy, who was this busy writer, like in the 1860s, when there was a famine, he would organize fundraisers to alleviate that famine. And of course, Ramakrishna organized campaigns against the idea of untouchables whenever there was a famine. And of course, Gandhi engaged in community organizing. So it was in the context of reading these books and also seeing these trucks. And one day in particular, I saw 8 or 9 trucks when I was walking Mr. Bean. There was traffic on Lakeshore, so I just saw all these trucks on our short walk, and then I just decided, okay, it's time to do something. I decided to set up a website and potluck, and my friend was here, and I thought, you know, what should we name this group? And I thought, oh, you know, Stop the Slaughter or something. And she said, no, you got to have a really positive name to draw people in. And she said, Pig Save. And I go, oh, that sounds pretty cool. So we'll, you know, and so we said, okay, let's call it Toronto Pig Save. And then we started having monthly potlucks. And when we first started, our goal was to make slaughterhouses have glass walls. That's our mission. And we started with art. And so we contacted local artists. We contacted Sue Coe, who's probably the world's most famous animal rights artist. Mm-hmm. And she donated like $7,000 worth of her prints.
Wow.
Twyla Francois from the Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals is an artist as well. And she sent us a lot of her photos as well as artworks. Caitlin Black, who wrote a graphic novel called Mary of Mud Creek, contributed to her campaign. And then there was this German multimedia artist, Dirk Gieselmann, just a wonderful, wonderful German multimedia artist. And when we contacted him, he was willing to translate his German artworks to English and even put our website on. And I do want to put that out there because he's willing to do that for other groups. So if you like some of his art, like there's one of a pig on a cross, which is very dramatic. And I know that another activist, Kate Steen, said, oh, she'd love to have one with a seal on a cross. So he's someone you can approach, and he'll translate, and even put your own website on. And there were other like local artists, like Anouk Bickers, who donated some art. So we actually have more than 100 pieces. So that's how we started. We started with artworks. And now we're sort of well-known for doing protests and vigils, and both our groups engage in that.
Okay, so my start to activism was really attributed to Anita. I was on vacation in Newfoundland, actually, beautiful, picturesque, relaxing vacation, and saw a video of some pig slaughterhouses in the UK and was horrified. I was horrified for the duration of our vacation, about 10 days, and my husband might say ruined it for everybody else because my mom was making us some great home cooking and I couldn't eat it. There was just, I just couldn't do it. And so then when we got back to Toronto, I thought, you know, I think veganism is going to be the way to go for me. and then kind of discovered Farm Sanctuary in Watkins Glen, New York, and learned about who Gene Bauer was and all the amazing things that he'd done, and heard he was coming to Toronto for the 10,000 Tastes event. So I went to volunteer that day at the event and then really got hooked. I thought it was, aside from maybe the day I got married, I don't know, it was the best day of my life to be in a room with 500 like-minded people. It was all inspiring. And just by coincidence, there was a visitor's day at Snooter's Farm Animal Sanctuary, and Anita needed a ride. So that's kind of how we hooked up. And so we had a great chat on the way up, and she was asking me, you know, did you know there was a pig slaughterhouse in Burlington? And I said, I do. It's literally just down the street from my house. And I think we both at that sort of moment kind of thought, how weird that there's one down the street from her house, one down the street from my house. Like, this is, you know, something sort of meant to happen here. And then I think we kind of casually talked sort of, so what are we going to do in Burlington? And, you know, I wouldn't say I was resistant, but I wasn't yet an activist. I was excited, and I knew there were things to be done, but I didn't know what yet. Then I did some reading and found out it was actually Ontario's largest pork processing facility. And I remember the day I went on Facebook and wrote, Fearman's is Ontario's largest pork processing facility, mission accepted. And that was kind of where Burlington Pig Save started. And we organized our first protest. We had a huge turnout, probably, I think it's huge, I don't know, 15 to 20 people, I think, the first time. Mm-hmm. Great support from the community. Of course, Toronto Pig Save came out to help as well, and we ended up having great coverage from the media. We had the cover of the Burlington Post, which was amazing, and today we had our second protest, which was huge. And so our goal sort of for Burlington Pig Save right now is to, you know, get more and more Burlington folks and Oakville folks and Hamilton folks, you know, so sort of west of Toronto, to help those guys get sort of out in the community and to get involved. And, you know, aside from the amazing turnout we had today, we had folks who weren't even a part of the protest come up to us and bring us, you know, trays of Tim Hortons coffee to thank us for what we were doing. One lady gave us a Tim Hortons gift card just to say thank you. And I think that's important, because I know for me, at one point in time, I would have been that person. I wouldn't have been ready to stand on a street corner in front of a slaughterhouse with a sign, but I would have gone and said, hey, here's some coffee to support your effort. So bigger and better things on the horizon for sure.
So you mentioned the protests today. I've been following your campaigns, particularly the protests, through Facebook and the Toronto Pig Save website. I'm wondering if you can describe for our listeners, some of whom are, you know, very abroad, maybe aren't aware of what's going on here. Can you describe what a protest looks like? What your typical sort of protest of Toronto Pig Save looks like?
Well, Toronto Pig Save holds three protests each week, all year round. So it's a very intensive community organizing approach. And what we do is we stand on the corner of Lakeshore and Strawn in front of the exhibition's Prince's Gates, because the transport trucks carrying the pigs stop at the lights there, and the lights last forever, like 2 minutes. And it gives us an opportunity to hold placards, leaflet at a site where the transport trucks are often visible. And it's also a great site because a lot of people use the lakeshore and they see the transport trucks full of pigs. So when we have placards there saying quality meat packers kills 7,000 pigs a day, it resonates with people because they've seen these trucks. And it has an effect also on the people that are bearing witness, like the protesters. A lot of people have come to these protests as first-time protesters, and we find that very impressive. Like, that's what we want. We want new people there who've never protested in their life, and they come. And it's usually a very emotional encounter the first time, because they get an opportunity to look into the trucks. And what they see is different from what you see when you see the trucks on the highway, because you really can look inside because they're stopped right there. You literally can put your hand in, and that's what we do. We actually touch the pigs. The pigs often move their snouts towards us. They want that affection. And what we see is often is like terrified, sad, scared pigs. Often there's expressions of dejection. Sometimes they're super crowded.
Scratched.
Often, yeah, they're bruised and scratched. And in extreme weather, for example, on the hottest days in July and August, they were dehydrated, foaming at the mouth, barely able to breathe, pushing their snouts out through the air holes, getting bloody snouts because of that, because they're just dying for some air. So in terms of what the protests involve is bearing witness, taking footage. We encourage everybody to bring a camera, take footage, and then share it on Facebook. So our group had about 100 members forever on Facebook when we just did the art shows. But since July, it grew by a factor of 3 or 4. Hmm. And that's when our group really took off, was once we started to do the direct action. And, you know, some people were in the spring were saying, like, okay, you have this group. Why are you just doing art shows? That's good. But, I mean, is that really effective? Well, the reason was is we wanted to get some footage first.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to get some footage of the slaughterhouse, and we did get that. We actually got footage of the kill floor. And once we got that footage, then we felt confident to sort of go to the next step and have weekly protests.
And you guys do, like, 3 a week.
That's right.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I've been to... You know, aside from the ones we've done in Burlington, I think I've been to 2 or 3 of the Toronto, and but only one was there a truck with what I call the sweet pink souls. And, you know, my immediate instinct is to go over and photograph and take video footage. And I wasn't at all prepared for the emotional reaction that I had. All I could do was cry. And mm-hmm. I'm going to get emotional right now. All I could do was cry and apologize for what we've done as a race to these creatures. It was, you know, and then I had to walk away from the truck and just kind of go cry on the edge of the space. But the protests we have in Burlington are a little bit different. The ones we've had have been on Saturdays so far, and there are no trucks on Saturdays, which is a curse and a blessing, I guess, because you can have a protest and have a lot of people come, and despite what you're protesting, everybody sort of vibrates off the energy of each other of yeah. what you're really doing. But actually, our first midweek or weekday protest is going to be next Friday on November 25th. And that's going to be the first opportunity for the Burlington Pig Save folks to bear witness, as Anita says, to the, you know, the pigs arriving and essentially meeting their torturous demise.
I want to talk about this the strategy of bearing witness. I'm wondering, you've used that term quite a bit. I'm wondering if one of you can maybe, like, talk about that a little more. Where that sort of, like, philosophy came from. I'm guessing it's from one of the many books that's scattered around this apartment. And talk about what that really looks like for people that are down at these protests.
Well, the Quakers are famous for using the strategy of bearing witness during their anti-slavery campaigns. A lot of NGOs like Greenpeace have used it. So, for example, Greenpeace activists would sail ships to the South Pacific to bear witness of nuclear bombs being exploded in the ocean, and they would aim to go right to ground zero. And so that's what we're doing. And in the case of our protests, we are going to ground zero, which is the slaughterhouse, and trying to make slaughterhouses have glass walls. And the importance of bearing witness is that you see the truth unfiltered. You're directly experiencing what the pigs are going through, like at least on their way to slaughter. You're looking inside the transport trucks. We then shift our protest to 677 Wellington, where they're unloading the pigs into the slaughterhouse, and you can hear them scream as they use rattle paddles and electric prods to unload the pigs. So bearing witness, it's about seeing, it's about hearing, it's about smelling. It's such a profound experience. And I can tell you the effect that it has had on me is that it has made me more and more committed to pigs, to dedicating the rest of my life to trying to help pigs. If you asked me a year ago, you know, what are your future ambitions? And I've always wanted to change the world in a positive way. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to write these books and do this and that. And, you know, a lot of it was self. And what happens when you engage in bearing witness, you start to be much more altruistic, and you work towards one big common goal, and your ego sort of fades a bit. Mm. And when I look at other activists, I just think we're one big soul. You know, that famous quote from this 1930s book by John Steinbeck, Grapes of Wrath. You know, he said, you know, we're just one big soul. And, you know, if you see an injustice, I'll be there kind of thing. It's his last speech to his mom as he's going, has to run off because he's going to be charged with murder because he helped the preacher Casey. So that's the way I see it, and that's what I find fascinating. And I've, you know, met some of the most amazing people in this campaign that are that altruistic. It's not about yourself anymore. You know, there's a bigger project, and it's here and now, and bearing witness is about here and now. It's mm-hmm. like about doing good right away. And I also wanted to talk about the ripple effects of bearing witness. It has effects on the drivers, on the workers, because they've experienced pigs as objects. They have this job, and they have to unload them quickly. And when we first started these protests, they would curse and scream at the pigs that they were unloading them. They would call them fucking bitches or really cursing them in a violent way. And they don't do that anymore. And when we first started, we occasionally got F fingers from a few drivers, not all. A lot of them would ignore us. They now take our literature. We engage in conversations. And they see the pigs differently. They're not as terrified, the pigs. When we witness the pigs in the trucks, they're not as bruised. Their eyes aren't popping out as much. This is not across the board. It varies. But so it's had an impact on the drivers and the workers, and it's also had an impact on the public. They're happy to see that finally somebody's, you know, we're politicizing an issue. They've seen these trucks for years, and their sort of normal reaction is often avoidance, or I don't want to think about it. Oh, I don't want to see that. But we've politicized this issue. We're saying, look, it's okay to look. In fact, you have a responsibility to look and join us. So it's had many ripple effects. Bearing witness is such a profoundly important strategy. The more I think about it, the bigger it is. Like, I just think it's such a timeless strategy. When there is gross injustice, when there is tremendous suffering, when there are victims, we all have a responsibility to bear witness. And bearing witness is not passive. It also involves intervention. As time goes on, the level of intervention is increasing, but we do it in a very peaceful way because we want to be effective. We want everybody on board. Mm-hmm. But it's going to involve more and more intervention. And it's certainly, it's a motivating force. I know for myself, it really motivates me to do more and more.
And I think that I'm certainly not as well spoken as Anita is, but for me, you know, I think if I was someone who was suffering an enormous atrocity, or I was suffering and nobody cared, nobody wanted to see, nobody wanted to stand on the street corner for me, that would be awful. So the least we can do for all the things we've done is stand there and go, yeah, we've done this, and we know we've done it. You know, you're not alone. We're going to bear witness.
I wanted to back up just a little bit. Anita, you mentioned having some intervention. You also mentioned that you were able to get footage of the kill floor at Quality Meatpackers. I'm wondering how you got that footage, and if you can discuss that at all. I don't know if you can.
Well, these slaughterhouses, although they look like prison camps and they have barbed wire, mm-hmm. I actually see them as incredibly porous. And it's partly because they're human beings that are defending them. They're security guards. Yeah. Some of them are vegetarian. And we talk to them with respect. I have fundamental respect for workers. And I know that working in a slaughterhouse is one of the worst jobs on the planet. I see it as alongside, you know, being a soldier and having to kill as a job. And I just, the Quaker philosophy of nonviolence, Gandhi, Tolstoy, from all these wonderful philosophers, we know that the innate sort of human condition is not to want to kill. I think it's very unnatural to kill, and it's something that's so horrendous. So these are the worst jobs. They're very dangerous. Nobody wants to spend 8 hours a day killing. So when we approach the workers, it's with fundamental respect and equality. You know, I think that the problem is really the consumer, people who let other people do the dirty work for them when they buy meat and consume dairy and so forth. So there's no blaming them. Like, we see them as allies, and we want to work with them. And we have a philosophy, which is a big tent, and we want to bring everyone on board. So given that, so slaughterhouses, although they look like prison camps, they're so porous because we engage with all the workers and down the road with the owners as well. That's our hope in management. But we start with the workers. So it hasn't been hard to get footage or information. I think all these places, I visited with Joanne MacArthur recently a slaughterhouse, and we got footage of everything except the electric stunning and the bleeding. But everything else, we got like full coverage of everything. And we do it in a way that we're not trying to shut down a specific place. We keep the slaughterhouse anonymous in the case of this visit to a small slaughterhouse. Paul McCartney said, if slaughterhouses had glass walls, everyone would be vegetarian. So our mission is to make slaughterhouses have glass walls. And there's so many ways of doing it. Like, we can work there, or we can have workers help us. So there are all these potential avenues. In the case of Quality Meatpackers, I went to the slaughterhouse along the railway lines, and they had an open window on the kill floor. And so it looks like I'm inside. Some people actually said, oh, how did you get inside? I was just at the, you know, on the railway lines, and I got great footage. I have an hour footage, and I've posted a lot of that footage on the, and it's so tragic what you see. There's hardwired electric prods. There's a chute, and the pigs are forced down at great speed down the chute with hardwired electric prods, and they're screaming because when the workers use the electric prods and trying to hit the pig on the back, the other pig's face might be hit. So you don't know where those prods are going. And when there's a pig that slows down or is, you know, crippled, they'll use the prod wherever they have to move it. Mm. And we know this from Gail Eisenitz's book, Slaughterhouse, where she interviewed workers. She said, you know, they would put the electric prod in the anus or in the eyes, whatever they had to do to move that pig. This happens. And these atrocities happen every day. And it has to do also with the speed of the production line. She wrote the book in a very pro-labor, pro-animal rights perspective. And it's the speed of the production line forces these guys to do whatever they have to do to move the so-called downers, which are really crippled and sick animals. So they get the worst treatment. It's so tragic. So we got a lot of great footage, and I believe we'll get footage from every slaughterhouse in Ontario. And we'll get that with the help of workers. And as I said, I see these places as really porous.
And I think having seen sort of the outside of quality meat packers for myself and then comparing Fearman's, my personal sort of perspective on it, Fearman's to me looks like Fort Knox. Like it's really, I don't want to say juxtaposition, but it's really quite different.
Mm.
I think it's significantly less porous. So I think our, you know, getting footage and documentation from Fearman's is going to be significantly more challenging because there's, you know, barbed wire as far as the eye can see, and they have several security checkpoints that trucks have to go through to even get into the sort of kill area, whereas quality meatpackers, it's, you know, kind of just the gate opens and the trucks go through. Like it's a very different setup that way,
which is odd because this, you know, the quality meatpackers is right in downtown Toronto, yet it's so
accessible.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I wonder if that maybe is part of it though, is that they just don't have the space for all these security checkpoints and all this sort of stuff down here in Toronto. I wanted to move on. We only have about 7 minutes left. So I wanted to talk briefly about, Anita, you mentioned during the heat wave in the summer, I wanted to talk about the responsiveness with which the campaign sort of addressed the heat wave and was able to get down there, and what kind of ripple effects that had in terms of media coverage.
Well, in July, a local resident, Teresa Inescu, was riding her bike along Wellington Street, and she noticed 10 trucks backed up, and it was a really hot day. And she stopped her bike and looked into the truck, and she saw pigs with bloody snouts in one of the trucks, and she was horrified. And what she did, she said she doesn't recognize boundaries like most people do, private property and so forth, so she just ran right into the slaughterhouse and started crying and says, do something, these pigs are dying of heat and dehydration. And they just told her to leave. And then she started calling everyone. She called the OPP, she called OSPCA, Humane Society. Humane Society said to call the police. That when she stopped a cruiser, he said, well, I don't know what, it's not my job. And she couldn't get through the OSPCA. She just got an answering machine. And then she started texting her friends, and through Marco Pagliarelli, I'm sorry, I'm not pronouncing his name correctly. He knows me, and he sort of messaged me. And I happen to live close by, and I work from home, and I do journalism and things. And so it was 2 hours after she first witnessed it. Once I found out, I went straight there. And then I made a few calls, like, what should we do? And then I called Lynn Cavanaugh, who's with the Canadian Coalition for Farm Animals, and she said, get footage. And I said, well, most of the trucks had moved in at that point, and they were on the private property. And then Teresa and I said, oh, let's just go and get the footage. And so we got about a minute of footage before the plant manager came. But we got excellent video footage, which showed the extreme conditions that these pigs were facing. Like, they were moaning, making all sorts of horrible vocalizations. They were foaming at the mouth and so forth. And so we put out that video, and a lot of people saw that video all over. Like, it got a lot of hits. And then WISPA put out an action alert. We wrote to the Canadian Food Inspection Agency. So our campaign really took off at that point. Mm-hmm. And that's when we started doing our weekly protests. We said, hey, it's pretty important to bear witness, especially in these hot days. And the National Post covered us. So that was, I would call that a trigger event, sort of a pivotal moment in terms of changing the tactics we were using and also getting bearing witness and getting footage out there.
So wrapping up, I wanted to talk about, you talked a little bit about the response from the community briefly, and I'm wondering if maybe we can talk about that directly. Like, what has been the response from, you know, people, drivers, security maybe, employees, workers, and the police, if any?
For us in Burlington, the response so far has been incredibly positive. Not only have we had local activists who didn't know they were activists come out and join us, you know, on the street corners. We actually had a girl join us this morning, and she was kind of nervous to hold the sign. Then as soon as she kind of, you know, she was standing there for about 5 minutes, and she loved it. Like, it's so empowering once you kind of stand there and do it. We get a lot of positive, you know, sort of honking and that sort of thing. And the most amazing thing that happened this morning, we had just sort of barely taken our positions with our signs outside the slaughterhouse, and this lovely lady came over with her small daughter and brought us a tray of coffees for everybody who was participating. And, you know, she said, thanks so much for what you were doing. And I thought, my God, that's just the most amazing, amazing thing. She wasn't ready to stand on the street corner, but there she was with coffee to help everybody. It was just the most amazing thing.
What about here in Toronto?
Well, what we noticed is when we first started, we got positive response, but also some negative response. But over time, it's gotten more and more positive. And I think it's because people have seen us there regularly. And also in terms of the responsiveness, in terms of taking literature, it's gone way up. So I think it's like people see us, and maybe they won't take the literature the first time, but maybe the third or fourth or fifth. Mm-hmm. They become curious and comfortable and open to our message. So I think what's important is to use sort of an intensive community organizing approach where you don't do a protest, you know, once a year or something. We're there all the time. What we've also noticed with the local community, we have built all sorts of contacts. People that live in the area have joined our group, which is what we love, because that's what community organizing is about. And we had a veggie dog giveaway on Labor Day, and we made a point of it being Labor Day because we are a pro-worker group. We're animal rights and we're pro-worker. In terms of the response from security guards and workers, they hired special security for us, and they were so supportive of us. They would give us information. They would, you know, take our veggie dogs on that day, but they don't hire them anymore. I think Quality Meat Packers figured that, you know, that they weren't serving their cause, which is unfortunate. In terms of workers, it's taken time. When we first started, the truck drivers carrying the pigs never took our literature. Never. Mm-hmm. Now they do. So that's a big shift.
That's huge.
And they know that we're pro-worker. You know, we make a point of it. And we're not, you know, when I started, even before the group was created, like I would give a thumbs down whenever I saw a transport truck, and it was with a lot of anger. That's gone. I have no anger. It's weird. Like, I don't even understand it. I have no anger towards workers, even if they're abusive. Like, I try to understand it, and I try to shift it. I feel a lot stronger. And people are able to do many protests because they're so positive. If it was negative, it was like, I don't want to go there. Like, you don't, you know, I don't want to go there all the time. But because it's so positive, we actually enjoy doing it, even though we're bearing witness that the conditions are really horrendous. But at the same time, there's so much support because all the people that are doing the protests have so much positive energy. They have so much love. So we're actually using a Gandhian love-based approach. And it's actually, I think it makes our message more receptive. It makes it easier to do our jobs. And the point is that the process is as important as the outcome. So we're being the change that we want to see. And I think that's making us strong. And that's why we have grown. If you look at the number of people that are active on our Facebook group, it's like phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's because we're using an approach where we want everybody to be a leader. It's not about one leader. It's not about, like, in our view, good leadership brings out the best in others and encourages leadership in others. So there are other leaders, and they're going to do the same for others. And I think the role model here is the civil rights movement. It had multiple leaders and what they called movement centers. Like, they had movement centers in different cities. There was activism in Alabama, like all the different southern states, Montgomery and so forth. And there were movement centers. And there were all these local leaders. And like, that's what's happening with this group. It started with Toronto Pig Save. Now there's a Burlington Pig Save. And today, at today's protest, we met this wonderful man from Hamilton who might start a Hamilton Cow Save. And then there's Daria in Toronto who wants to start a Chicken Save. And what we want to see across this province, across Canada, across the world, is to have these kind of groups at every slaughterhouse. Because in our view, slaughterhouses are one of the saddest, darkest places on earth. They're like war zones. And we want to see a world where there are no slaughterhouses. And we want to see every slaughterhouse challenged. We don't need this. We're calling for a transition, a just transition for workers, towards a food economy that's whole grain, plant-based, namely vegan. And it's a win-win situation for all of us. Workers would have better jobs, safer jobs, meaningful jobs, nonviolent jobs, safe jobs. And people need to eat. Meat and dairy are not necessary. And so what we're working towards is a different food economy.
All I can think about is that I feel like I've told my Tim Hortons story twice during our interview. That's what I was thinking. And to that point, my husband is meat and potatoes kind of guy from the Midwest. And so when I decided to become vegan, he was incredibly supportive, but wasn't necessarily ready to jump on the bandwagon. And then we watched Forks Over Knives, and our entire household changed. The next day we went to get groceries, and I said, "Do you need to go to the deli counter?" And he said, "Not really." And I could barely contain myself. I was so excited. And so that was only like 2 months ago. But, you know, it only takes the smallest thing. And when we watched it, and I didn't ever think that that was going to change him to a whole plant-based diet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's got even a further, you know, step further than I have. Hey, B, he's almost completely raw. Like, it's really amazing. It's really amazing, the smallest thing that can make someone change.
We have Mr. Bean, the inspiration for Toronto Pig Save, joining the interview here.
kissing Patty at the moment.
So just finally, you've already, I think, alluded to it a little bit, but I'm wondering what's on the horizon for the Toronto and Burlington Pig Save? What's coming up soon and what's coming up in the future?
Well, we've got, like I said, our first protest next week. That's going to be, we're going to bear witness to the trucks arriving at Fairbanks in Burlington. And we've got an amazing fundraiser coming up on December 9th, which is going to support Toronto Pig Save, Burlington Pig Save, Maximum Tolerated Dose, and what's it?
Animal Aid Unlimited, right. In Udaipur, India.
And thanks to Anita and her lovely sister, it's going to be an amazing event. We're going to have Toronto City Councillor Glenda Bearmaker come and speak. It's going to be amazing. So a lot of great things, I think. A lot of great things are coming in the future.
Right. What's wonderful about our group is we have so many people who just take the lead on doing things. So in this case, Patty is an event organizer as her day job, and she's lended her skills to make this event phenomenal. In terms of what else is on the horizon, you know what's incredible? Because we encourage leadership in all our members. Like, one of our members is a bird watcher, so she's doing a fundraiser tomorrow. We're doing a bird watching at Humber, and she did one earlier at Leslie Spit. Other members are yoga instructors, so we have someone who does karma yoga for us. And then there's Kristen of Know Thy Foods, and she's providing free services for the vegan dinner on the fundraiser, and she's willing to do a series for us. So in terms of the future, when we have fundraisers, it's never going to be just for, you know, Burlington Pig Save, Toronto Pig Save. We're always going to do it with other groups as well, in order to build capacity across the movement. And that is just our philosophy in general. It's not about us. There's no such thing as turf. There's no such, you know, it's all about helping the animals and people and worker rights and all these issues, and we're, you know, we're one big soul, basically. And, you know, we're all working together and we're all empowering each other. Personally, I find it's very inspiring and fulfilling, and we've met some of the loveliest people in this movement. Like, I've worked in many movements. I'm in my 40s, so I've worked in, like, the peace movement, the environmental movement, and I've never encountered so many wonderful people in my life as I encountered in the last, you know, half a year to a year.
Yeah, it's really fascinating how quickly and with such open arms everybody from Toronto Pig Save will embrace you. And recently we had a protest and it was a little chilly and I didn't bring a jacket. And I'm telling you, Mama Anita was not going to let me, she wasn't going to let me stand out there until I had a jacket and a scarf and some mittens.
And then at today's protest, Patty had extra mitts for everybody. So there you go.
I take my lead from you.
Thank you guys so much for joining me today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much. Yeah, thanks for doing the show. It's great.
A big thank you again to Anita for inviting me into her home and to both Patty and Anita for sitting down with me on Saturday night. That's our show for today. Stay tuned for Raw Sugar with Charissa coming up next.